From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, missing and presumed dead, a psychic search for justice. Wow, I'm looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. North Korea is claiming that it has tested a miniaturized hydrogen bomb less than a month after the country's dictator boasted that the weapon had been developed. Now, a hydrogen bomb is way more powerful than what was used in 1945. The surprise announcement further complicates efforts to curb the nation's move toward a working nuclear arsenal and will almost certainly lead to a push for new sanctions at the United Nations. The leader of an armed militia that has hunkered down at a remote Oregon wildlife refuge to protest federal land policy said that the actions of his group represented an attempt to remove governmental intimidation and fear. The small group of activists who came to the wildlife refuge were bundled in camouflage, earmuffs, and cowboy hats in the very bleak high desert of eastern Oregon, where their occupation now entered its fourth day. Law enforcement has been in no rush to confront the group. That's likely due in part to the isolated outpost that the two dozen or so activists choose to hole up in. The activists sieged the refuge about 300 miles from Portland Saturday night as part of a decades-long fight over public lands in the West. President Obama has announced plans to expand background checks to almost anyone buying a firearm from a dealer and make other gun rule changes via executive action, bypassing Congress and fueling an election year fight with Republicans. The president, speaking at the White House, said background checks make a difference and will be expanded so they can cover purchases online at gun shows and in other venues. This would put the onus now on most sellers to get a license and conduct the checks. A coronal mass ejection. You know, we've been talking about this. Some kind of an X-flare from the sun. Well, it was expected to hit the Earth on January 4th. It did not. It appears to have missed. It was not that big. But you know what? One day it will be. Well, you know, yesterday we talked about robots and what's going to happen in the future. And today there's a story that says that there will be as many robots as there are humans within the next 24 to 39 years, according to a blog post. The writer is a science fiction novelist, but you know what? He might be right. A little 8-week-old kitten who was rescued after being dyed purple and used as a chewy toy for a larger animal is recovering after it had emergency surgery in a California hospital during the weekend. The kitten, weighing less than 2 pounds, nicknamed Smurf because of its purple-blue hue, needed abdominal surgery. Smurf, who was brought to a San Jose shelter on December 28th with about 20 bite marks and deep wounds on his body, will likely require several weeks of recovery and may be ready for adoption in 3 months or so. I would bet that as soon as he's up for adoption, he's going to be taken just like that. Parents are being urged to sign up for a free app which tells them the sugar content of food and drink. The Sugary Smart app from the Public Health England works by scanning barcodes and revealing total sugar in cubes or grams. Officials hope it will help combat tooth decay, obesity, and type 2 diabetes, and encourage families to choose healthier alternatives. It's a pretty neat app. Ever reach for your vibrating smartphone in your pocket only to find it didn't buzz at all? You're not alone. It's called phantom vibration syndrome. That's right. It's a real psychological phenomenon, and studies in the past few years have found that when surveying college undergraduates, that the majority experience this phantom vibration once every 2 weeks. And they say the more social ties people have at an early age, the better their health is at the beginning and the end of their lives. That's right. According to a new study from the University of North Carolina, the study is the first to definitively link social relationships with concrete measures of physical well-being, such as obesity, inflammation, high blood pressure. And they say that the more social you are, the better health you're in. Our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, with us. Hey, Peter, why is that the case? If you're more social, you're going to be in better shape.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And it just has to do with who we are as human beings. You know, we're really made of each other. We're made of the nurturing we get when we're little. We're made of mother's milk. We're made genetically of each other. And human beings, we evolved over 2 million, 3 million years as very social creatures. That's what helped us survive. That's how we're different from all other creatures, is in the degree, complexity, subtlety of our social lives. It's why we have such a big brain. You know, our brain doubles in size in the first year of our lives, George, because it becomes a social brain.
Sure.
We're born like a fetus, you know, completely helpless, and then we're nurtured and talked to and played with, and we get all this brain growth in response to our socialization. So we are a matrix creature. I think it's just good news that medicine is more and more recognizing that our social relationships determine our physical and our mental health to a huge extent. They even more so determine things like whether we're going to get depressed or anxious or chronically angry and frustrated and, or suicidal or violent. So life is about our social relationships, and I think you're so aware of that, you know, and I'm thinking about you during the Christmas and New Year's, how you're there keeping up your relationships with your audience, and I just think on every level, social relationships make us human and make us healthy.
Okay, my friend, thank you. Dr. Peter Bruggen, he's one of the best, and he's a great advisor. The Consumer Electronics Show is going on in Las Vegas this week, and they say that a television that can be rolled up like a newspaper and a refrigerator that messages you to tell you when the food is out of date are among the new products set to be unveiled at the Consumer Electronics Show. That's amazing, isn't it? All that going on. And up next, what other trends, by the way, especially for 2016? George Ure joins us next on Coast to Coast AM to talk about future trends. And welcome back to Coast, our friend George Ure. He's a business executive, a vocational college president, an airline vice president, a longtime news director of a major station in Seattle during the rock and roll wars. He publishes his urbansurvival.com website all the time, and he's also got peoplenomics.com. That's a website that, you know, it lays out highly unusual perspectives of the economy based on long-term cycles. And that's what we're going to talk with George about for the next couple hours. We'll take your calls next hour. These trends and these cycles. Hello, Mr. Ure. Welcome back.
Mr. Nouri, it is a pleasure to be back.
I am looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to the new year, which kind of came to us pretty quickly, didn't it?
And with a big bang in the Pacific today.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt. So what do we do? What's going on?
Well, I think, you know, the real macro picture is in my work on cyclical economics, we're in the process of replaying the period from about 1921 through 1929. Couple of things drive me to that conclusion. One is how the Fed is dealing with interest rates. The Fed raised its discount rate in 1928, and very similarly, we're starting to raise Fed rates a bit here recently.
Mm-hmm.
That did not forestall the arrival of the Great Depression, but the real problem we have right now is we're failing really to take note of the social analogs that were going on. You have to remember, during the Great Depression, we got into it because of a period of massive overproduction. The tractor had been invented around the turn of the century, and once the tractor was invented, along came the automobile. And the first thing you know, there were about 7 million acres of farmland in turn of the century America that was devoted strictly to the raising of draft animals. What happened was that farmland became useless.
That's right.
When the internal combustion engine came along. So people left the American farm. They started moving into the big cities. And that was the first real migration off the farm. Today we've got a different kind of migration. And it's one that most people pay very little attention to, but it's the migration out of the shared here and now, call it industrial reality, as people are moving more and more into virtual territory. We're seeing people go to work and literally sit in front of computer screens 8 to 10 hours a day, and that constitutes almost like a digital rapture taking place, because mentally, we're in a completely different place. We're off the planet. We're on the internet, and the internet is causing these huge fundamental changes, including an odd kind of, change of focus, if you will. And while that's going on, recently I've been doing a lot of writing about a World Bank report from 2008, where a very well-intended effort was made to look for some way to get to perpetual growth. But the problem was that the route to perpetual growth came from migration of poor people to rich economies. And the problem with that is that the rich economies, and particularly Germany and some of the European countries, got hooked on growth. And as a result, we're seeing some major displacements beginning. So we have a virtual migration going on into the realm of computers. Crossing that, we have a physical migration. The physical migration is because of an addiction to growth.
In St. Louis, for example, it looks like the St. Louis Rams they could leave and move back to Los Angeles. And the owner of the Rams, George, filed his report with the NFL and chastised St. Louis. And he talked about it has no growth. It's just things are slow. It's not one of the big cities anymore. Basically, I want out of here.
Right.
Is that happening all over the place, all over the country?
Yeah, we've had a lot of whining from sport, and I'm not a big sports fan, right? Sports has a function, I suppose, as a war substitute.
Mm-hmm.
People go out and fight, literally fight over a ball, a hockey puck.
The Romans knew how to use it.
Yeah,
in the Colosseum.
Exactly. Bread and circuses time, right? The problem is that this is something that goes back to, the 1970s. 1960s even. I was a news director up in Seattle during the time the great debate was on about whether or not King County should use public bonding authority to build the kingdom. And the public really wanted to get a pro sports franchise, get the Seahawks going and so forth. But there was a little known critic of the stadium project, a guy named Frank Ruano. And Frank told me many times, he said, good idea and everything, but we'll never pay for this stadium. And it turned out Romano was right.
Yeah.
The kingdom was blown up. Shape charges were used. My wife and I were on our sailboat out in Elliott Bay watching the kingdom being blown up in about, I think it was 2000. And it was a remarkable event because, the public bonding authority, is that something we should lend to commercial interests? We do it all the time, of course. We bail out the too big to fail, and we have all of these other really questionable value judgments. It's one of those things that in true capitalism, you just let businesses that get in trouble fall apart. But we don't do that. Instead, we're really anxious to save the jobs in Detroit, for example, bailing out the auto industry. Mm-hmm. And it pays off.
Sure.
The auto industry has been the shining light of this economy, of the mythical recovery. And the other part of the mythical recovery is the stimulus effect of massive migration. Germany has accepted, literally over a million refugees in the past several years. But in return for accepting refugees, they're getting a huge economic stimulus. It's very, very highly charged emotionally. But when you sit back and try and look at the world as a great interlocking spreadsheet, which is what I tried to do, you find that it's not as chaotic, it's not as random. There's an awful lot of, well, if this piece works, then this piece has to go here. And the news is not nearly as surprising as many people believe it to be on a superficial level.
Now, let's talk about some trends here for 2016, George. What do you see ahead for this year?
I'm actually very optimistic. I think we'll continue unwinding a bit during the month of January, but about, oh gosh, an 80% chance that we'll be at record highs in both the Dow and the S&P.
Really? Even though they got slapped yesterday? Huh?
Oh, sure, sure. It's really interesting. A year ago, I was on the show, and we talked about, you know, what I saw, and I said, well, we could have a pullback to as low as 1740 in the S&P. We didn't quite get there. We got down to 1865 in the S&P. But I also said the Dow should drop under 16,000 or so. And sure enough, the Dow dropped to 15,370. And so, you know, the guess is pretty good. You have to remember that the growth we have had in the economy and in stock prices since the low in March, April of 2009 is just about a perfect fit to the run-up in the market from, say, 1921 to the middle of 28. So if you imagine the bubble of the roaring 20s that finally capped everything off, most of that bubble occurred in the final year and a half. And we're just now coming up on that historical rhyming period. Don't run out and invest money. We'll put some money on it on our own. But generally speaking, you know, a high in the Dow of even as much as 30,000 on the Dow is possible if we continue following this replay of 1929.
How low can oil prices get?
I think we're very near to those lows right now. The oil prices probably have something of a floor under them, about $28-$29, but practically speaking, low 30s, and we've already visited that. One of the reasons for that, and again, this is how interlocking financial relationships explain a tremendous amount. I've read reports that Saudi Arabia is way upside down in their economy because their break-even point with all their social programs. They run kind of a royal welfare system which trickles down from the royal family, but it works very effectively, and it's an interesting system of governance. But they have a break-even point of about $100 a barrel for keeping their country happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're under that. Yeah, we're totally under it. And here's how the news kind of fits together, right? It's like a big jigsaw puzzle. So if you've got a country and you have a population that is used to being well-fed, well-cared for, how do you keep them in line? How do you keep everybody pulling together? Well, the answer is you have an enemy. And along comes the Shia Sunni split in Islam. And the Saudis, of course, that's the land of the Wahhabi and so forth, they're very strongly Sunni. And the Shiites, the Iranians, are pressuring them. And so if we see a schism in Islam, it is being fueled in part by low oil prices. Because did you ever read that book, Report from Iron Mountain, on the accessibility and desirability of peace?
No, I never did.
Fascinating book. Back during the Vietnam War, it came out as a parody, supposedly a piece done by a think tank. And it was a great book because it said war serves an awful lot of economic functions.
Of course, yeah.
Not the least of which is it's a great excuse to get taxes. It's a great excuse to keep people under control. Regimentation comes along during that, social controls and so forth. And to a very large degree, the theory, even though it was supposedly a satire, the theory of that book seems to very nicely apply in the modern world. A country that goes very, very militant take North Korea with their bomb deal today.
Hold on for a second, George. Okay. We're at the break already. We'll be back and talk more about trends in 2016. Absolutely, and we're talking trends. George, you're our special guest. We'll take calls next hour with George. We'll get your trends, too, as a matter of fact. Welcome back to Coast, George. You're with us. I'm George Norrie. Lots of Georges going on these days, George, huh?
Fine name.
Who were you named after? Anybody in particular?
Yeah, way back when there was somebody named George in my family.
My grandfather from my father's side, whom I never met because he died before I was born. That's who they named me after. So, back to trends.
Well, before the break, we were talking about how governments need ways to keep their civilian populations under control. And by under control, that means, you know, yielding to Caesar that which Caesar wants, and that's taxes. It's very interesting to note the relative size of North Korea's economy with their setting off an H-bomb. Their GDP, gross domestic product per person, is about $1,800, and they spend the reports are varied, but on the low side, they spend 19%, on the high side, 26% of the entire output of that country on defense spending.
Yeah, huge. I mean,
it's an amazing number. Now, just across the border, you go from $1,800 per person per year to an average of 26,000 a year in South Korea.
26,000?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, well, no, the U.S. is up at about 53 and change. So $53,000 of GDP, you don't need to have a great big slice. In fact, we probably, on a per capita basis, are spending, maybe, 20% total from all the taxes we pay? And that pays for everything. On the other hand, in North Korea, that's the fraction that they're putting just into defense. In terms of future developments, the things that I wake up in the middle of the night worrying about, I worry about a dark alliance taking place. It's like a chess puzzle. You put things together in different places on the board and go, well, if this move happens, then what would happen? And the one that bothers me the most right now, George, is what would happen if we had three or four wars light off at the same time? Picture North Korea developing a relationship with ISIS or ISIL, or North Korea developing a closer relationship with Iran, which is already doing extensive missile testing. They've had some launches, I believe, out in the Caspian off of platforms. And so when you look at the technologies, if the North Koreans, the Iranians, and other Shiite interests all got together, that could be very bad. And in that gulch, China is now in a major slowdown. There's no denying it. The Shanghai market was down 7% Monday. They are definitely in the cooling mode. And what better way to ramp up the economy of China than to go more onto a war footing? And that, of course, would bring Taiwan into the crosshairs.
Sure would.
So we have these places. If you draw X's on the map, you've got a potential battle over Ukraine. You've got our undeclared war to kick out President Assad from Syria. And we've got the Russians bombing the ISIS oil tankers to keep that back channel of revenue off stream. I mean, this really gets to be complicated. And then, of course, you've got the tensions around Lebanon. Israel is always in a state of high readiness, so that's kind of a question mark. And then as you go around the globe, you've got India and Pakistan, both nuclear-armed countries. And unlike the standoff between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union during the Cold War. They don't have 20 minutes of flight time between them. They've got about 5 minutes of flight
time. Yeah, there's not much time to make up your mind.
Yeah, and then as you travel around the world, you see Taiwan and North Korea. And so if you had two or three of those really light up, and I don't mean, you know, people from the State Department going and passing out cookies or the people from the EU. The EU's problematic. The European Union, a lot of their top officials have retired fairly young, you know, 55-ish, great big fat pension benefits and so forth. And they've really become addicted to the economic stimulus that bringing a million people into what I now call Eurabia because of the huge influx of migration. They are in a really difficult spot because they're making a bet that people coming to Europe will participate in the system, will assimilate, and will pay a lot of taxes so the fat cats that are retired can keep getting their money. That's an interesting notion, but I'm not sure there's any historical precedent for it. You know, people either will or will not assimilate based on their cultural backgrounds, and I'm not terribly optimistic about that. So, you know, the period that gets really dicey will probably not come after until after the onset of a great big depression, and I don't think we're going to get there till 2017, 2018 now. And one of the reasons is we're...
But you do think we'll get there.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. The problem with the Western system of capitalism is if I've got 10 bucks and you don't have a penny and I lend it to you at interest, where are you going to get that extra money from? And so we're always watering down our currency in order to effectively make up the bookies would call the VIG. and so we have watered down the American dollar to the point where we have 4.17%, just a little over 4% of the purchasing power in the dollar that we had in 1913 when the Federal Reserve came along. People don't realize it, but in 1913, a steak dinner was $1. Today, it's about 25. Yeah. And you can test that in just about any commodity you want, but that's what's happened. We are in this diluting the dollar, and it's not bad because it allows the little guys like you and me to buy homes with 20% down, live in
or less.
Sure. Although the no-doc loans have sort of dried up, but you bet that inflation is not entirely bad because it's a social conveyor that lifts people up, and it's still working. The problem, though, comes after we get through 2016. The reason I'm so optimistic for the stock market, George, is I think even the Republicans think they've got a real shot at it. Historically, they do because the winner of the 28 election was Herbert Hoover, and he was replaced with Roosevelt in the 32 election. And so historically, the Republicans have a good shot at it. But the other side of it is that so do the Democrats, and both sides believe very strongly that they're going to come out victorious.
Well, that was going to be my next question to you too, George, is to make a 2016 presidential election prediction.
Well, it depends on if you ask me from the heart level or you ask me from the finance level. My heart is Trump is saying some good things. Cruz is saying some good things. I'm less thrilled with Rubio, but as a conservative American, put it that way, if I look strictly at finance, Hillary owns it. The real question is, can the office of president be purchased? And there's a pretty strong case that it can be. It's all a matter of advertising, persuasion blocks, cost per point in advertising.
Would you rule Jeb Bush out yet? You didn't mention him.
Yeah, I didn't mention him because the one liability I think Bush has is he would be identified too strongly by too many people as being part of the two previous Bush administrations.
Of course, absolutely.
And then we get into the whole problem of the American aristocracy, and one can paint Hillary into that box because she too has been around the White House before, not as the sole decision maker, but there, you know, pillow talk is pillow talk.
Yeah, well, that is true. You were down on bitcoins, as I still am, but you have kind of tempered that a little bit.
Yeah, that comes, George, from looking at Elliott Wave application. Basically, the Bitcoin in this time around may be the analog to stuffing money in a mattress. It's a potential way to stuff money on a hard drive. And that's progress for you, right? We go along 85 years or so, and we go from the mattress to the hard drive. Boy, are we ever an advanced species. But I think that there is a good chance that Bitcoin or one of the cryptocurrencies will emerge over time and will become kind of a dollar alternative. The good news about Bitcoins is there isn't right now an easy way to water them down. Except, as bitcoins go up in value, so will the satoshis, and so, which is a fraction of a bitcoin. And so, yeah, I think, there's a case for another run at a third wave up for Bitcoin. The first wave took it up to almost 1,000. On that basis, there's a case for $1,500, $1,800 kinds of bitcoins. But again, what does a digital thing represent in the way of purchasing power? I'm a lot like Gerald Celente in I like gold. I've always liked gold. I like silver. I like having your own personal seed vault and a little bit of skills in gardening. But I don't think you're going to need it yet. I think that comes Q1, Q2 of 2017, where we get a new president. We're going to anyway. But whoever it is turns out to be a disappointment. When Hoover took office in March of 29, it took about 6-7 months for the stock market to hit its ultimate blow-off high September 3rd of 29, and then several months for it to really get around to crashing late October of 29. So if we look at that kind of time frame, we're looking at from ascension to office, which I think the swearing-in will be January of 17. So the real crash would come along probably, September, October-ish of 17, right at the end of Q2, beginning of Q3. And then, because we don't really have a manufacturing economy, except for cars, which are keeping everything alive, and except for migration, because, like it or not, people who come to America need house, they need food, they need English as a second language, they need specialized texts, all of those things, that is economic stimulus, whether you like it or not. So we're in this period of time where to accurately forecast trends, you've got to be pragmatic and not really care too much about the emotional heartstring pulls that are going on in the media, in the political sphere. The real business of America is run by major law firms in Washington, D.C., and legions of lobbyists who buy legislation. And frankly, we've got idiots in Congress because the people in Congress don't take the time to thoroughly read and think through the legislation they pass.
Are you concerned about anything in 2016? Deeply concerned about anything?
Yeah, I'm concerned about left field events, the things that can come along seemingly out of the blue. We've heard about Planet X, and Planet X somehow never shows up, or great subsidence and major earthquakes, earth changes, that kind of thing. One of these days, though, that sort of thing will actually arrive. I'm concerned about global warming because when one looks at the relationship between sunspots and the solar heating, the effects of heat islanding, all the jiggering of the data, it's problematic. But the biggest problem in global warming in America right now is the runaway gas leak out of Porter's Ranch. You know,
yeah,
that's one where we're releasing as much bad stuff into the atmosphere as any number of volcanoes. So it's that kind of left field event that could, you know, throw out any hope of a major new high for the markets, and would make whoever comes in as president, they'd be left holding a bag of a country with major financial problems, which could inhibit our recovery from any left field event. Terrorism, yeah, maybe. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, there's one part of game theory that would suggest that large populations of immigrants coming to America actually could be viewed as a human shield. I mean, let's face it, in the Middle East, who's going to attack a city which has a substantial Middle Eastern population that's now in the U.S.?
Well, I got to tell you, that I sense that there's still something big on the horizon, George. I can feel it.
Yeah, but the numbers don't say that. And that's one of the reasons that the market is in a big decline right now, because people are very much afraid of tomorrow. You know, we have a president who's come out with a real grab at the Second Amendment. I happen to be a gun owner.
Me too.
Yeah, right. And I'm not a crazy gun owner.
Me too.
the problem is that the gun ownership right is being slowly morphed into a privilege. And if there's one thing that government really does well over a protracted period of time, it is the slow erosion of rights to where all of a sudden they become privileges. And I'm not real happy with giving a doctor the ability to say something bad about you or me, and then, you know, losing our gun rights because of the medical analysis. What I think will happen as a result of that, there will be a lot of doctor shopping. You know, dear doctor such and such, I'm looking for a new doctor.
Yeah.
What are your views on medical marijuana, gun ownership? If somebody has medical marijuana, should they be prohibited from owning a gun? Well, I don't think so, because I'm not aware of anybody on pot going out and doing anything crazy. On the other hand, if you read Catcher in the Rye and are coming down off a psychotropic, and you're a male age 16 to 35, well, yeah, then you're in a high-risk group.
George, 2016 is going to come by so fast.
Oh, yeah.
You and I will be talking toward the end of the year going, remember in January when we were talking about this?
And I'm,
it's
and
going
I'm
to be
hoping,
like that.
I'm really hoping, George, that the ability of Wall Street to climb a wall of worry will show up in spades this year, that we should get up into the 25 to 30,000 on the Dow.
Wow.
And it's not out of the realm of possibility.
You would be one of the few to predict that, you know.
Oh, I know. Although I put the prediction out in Peoplenomics, gosh, it must have been when we were at the lows this past summer. I said, you know, don't get sucked into thinking this is the end of the world, because it likely is not. The numbers, the Elliott wave structure, the loose money policy of the Fed, all of that argues for a higher market. Now, it doesn't mean you'll be able to buy much more because we're watering down the currency, but it's better to have some than none.
Well, that's true, too. Hey, when we come back, tell us about Rural Pioneer. A little bit about that, if you will. And then we're going to take some phone calls with George Ure, questions about trends, jump on board. That's next.